So, fellas, why don't you introduce yourselves and then tell us how Joe Symes and the Loving Kind got started.
I'm Joe, the singer-songwriter.
I'm Colin, the drummer.
There's only two of us today, as the others are not available to do it. We started out just on it over 18 months ago. I was doing acoustic open mic nights around Liverpool, and things started really picking up with interviews, magazine, media interviews and stuff, and Colin came on board, and me and Colin go back a long way, and we basically took it from there. We were doing open mic nights, and then we decided to get band members in.
Yeah, Joe claims this, I can't remember it, but I think it was in a bar somewhere, and I just said, oh, you know, to hell with it, let's get, like, you know, a bass player and a guitarist and all. So we went through the grueling audition process, and obviously there was some very insane people we met. And finally we found Chris on bass and Paul on guitar, and we haven't looked back.
Now, coming from Liverpool, I mean, obviously we don't have to ask if the music scene's banging over there. It obviously is, but do you find it's harder for bands to get their start there because of the legacy that is Liverpool? Not just the Beatles, but I mean some of the people that came after them.
And well, naturally, you know, you're gonna get that. In the band, I mean, like, people who we speak to around the world, there's instantly a mention of the Beatles, which is, like, you know, where we idolise the Beatles naturally. And I think they're a pretty big act to follow, you know, and they have been for a long time. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great bands that come to Liverpool since the Beatles, Echo and the Bunnymen, The Icicle Works, The Farm. Yeah, we're good friends with Carl Hunter, who's the bass player on The Farm. We've made a lot of great friends with people, like, you know, a lot of celebrities and stuff and all that since, like, the band's formed, and we're on first name terms with them, handshakes and stuff and all that. And I think, you know, the things seem to be a lot of things happening in Liverpool at the moment, a lot of things happening at the moment. And every time we play gigs out to Liverpool, there's bands were saying, we want to get it to Liverpool because we're hearing so much about it. So there's a real uprising in Liverpool at the moment.
Well, do you think that brings me to my next point. Do you think on the flip side, maybe that legacy that Liverpool has helped the music scene because it's pumped all this fame and recognition into the city?
Probably, because I think people like to come here and say, well, you know, if a lot of bands came from that city, let's go there and see what's happening, because, you know, new bands might be, people say, oh, you never know, you know, that band might be really big soon, that band might be really big soon. So, you know, I think, you know, I think Liverpool, like every major city in the UK, whether it be, you know, Liverpool, Manchester, Glasgow, London, Birmingham, you know, they've all got their own legacy. So I think, you know, Liverpool is one of many places that in the UK that has strived. I think UK music as a whole is quite interesting at the moment. That's what I say.
Well, because I'm speaking, like, well, as an American, when I plan trips to Europe and places like that, I think, okay, if I, you know, when I go to Rome, I want to try out the food. When I go to Paris, I want to try out the wine. When I go to Liverpool, I want to check out the bands.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's literally outside of Liverpool come to that. I mean, people think Liverpool, they think, you know, music.
Yeah, naturally, it's like Liverpool, do you think music? And, like, I think with, like, since the Beatles have put Liverpool on the map in a really, really big way for a lot of reasons. And also with the time that it was going on, because the whole world was going through a change, so it was a perfect time for them. And we're, like, you know, it's great for us because we can say, like, oh, you know, they came from Liverpool, we're from Liverpool. And it's brilliant to say that. That's one thing I really love saying. Liverpool's got, there's so much going on in the city outside of music at the moment as well. It's a really big tourist attraction, really big. I mean, you've only got to go down Matthew Street, where the original cabin was, and see it at a weekend, and it's like a festival. You can't move. It's so electrifying, the atmosphere. Liverpool as well, yeah. I've been to Liverpool.
All right. Well, how did you guys, let me bring up the next question then. How did you guys come up with the songs on your album, the songwriting process? Because the song, I've heard your single, and I just think it has such a lush sound to it.
Yeah. Well, it's basically, I mean, I write the songs initially, but the finished product, we all have an input on it. So it's whatever, you know, it's whatever's going on in what I'm thinking or whatever I see on the telly or out on the freedom or whatever. You know, it's just a natural thing, but it just happens. I mean, if you listen to the first album, it's so diverse on it when you hear it. I mean, Colin will send us some tracks over from the album. But now, with the new single, things get better. We're currently in the process of making a video for it, and it's going to go out on iTunes. The album's out on iTunes also. We are a lot heavier now. We're a lot heavier, but still catchy. But the songs on the first album, you'd have to purchase the album. It's an actual theme, and it's got an actual interlude on it as well.
Well, when I first heard Things Get Better, I got to be honest, when I first heard that, being a musician myself, it almost sounded like a lesson in songwriting, like how to write a song.
Okay.
We'll quote that.
I'm happy with that.
Well, thanks. But I mean, it really did. I mean, the verse, the intro flowed into the verse flowed into the chorus flowed into the bridge. It was seamless from beginning to end. And I don't know if I can explain this right, but you'll probably know what I'm talking about. There are a lot of songs out there where at one point in the music, it sounds like it's patched together.
Yeah, the keyboard break on it, I played the keyboard break on it myself, personally, and the swipe on it, I done that with my arm to finish it off, but whatever you listen to, it will come out in what you write, it's like you are what you eat, so if you listen to like great bands and all that, you know, you're going to come out with great songs, you know, and it's nice that you said it's a lesson in songwriting. That's a real compliment for me, and I'm very, very happy with that. And it just happens. I don't know. It's like, you know, it's as Lennon said, you know, when he was a guy, he was there camping out in his garden, and he said, you know, everything fits. And Lennon said, well, you know, you just put words together and it fits. And if it means something to someone, then that's great, you know. Sometimes it can change people's lives, music. It's, you know, we've all learned and realized from that, you know, hence the great music that we all listen to, we all adhere to.
Well, exactly. And, you know, as a musician, like I said, I'm a musician myself, and I think that's why I was able to point that out. But sometimes it is damn hard to fit, you know, multiple pieces of music together, because music is usually written, or songs are usually written in chunks. You know, at least that's how I write them, where, like, you know, one piece of music is finished before another, and then you've got to figure out ways to marry them together. And that's just impossible sometimes.
Yeah, it is. I mean, some songs can take weeks to write. Some songs I've wrote have come in, like, half an hour, and I'm lucky to have put them down there and then. I've got my iPhone 4, and it's full of songs and ideas and guitar riffs and stuff from all that. And like, it's great technology now. You can just put it down and forget about it, go back and listen to it. But some songs will be easy. Some songs will take weeks, I say weeks. I've just been working on another new track before the came here. Now I've had that idea for about 4 days, and I'll play over it. Then I'll walk around the house and ideas will start coming to me. And like, you know, it just sort of like, it grows on you. It's like the cockroach in the dark, you know, so to speak. If you turn on the light, you know, the bug will run away from you. But if you turn the light off, the bug will come to you. It doesn't know where, you know what I mean? That sort of used that stuff in the emphasis on, like, writing songs. So, you know.
Which that is literally true in this studio with the bugs, so, by the way. But, no, well, let me ask you this as a songwriter, from one songwriter to another, do you find it hard to listen to other music when you're in the songwriting process? Because I have that problem where I can't listen to the radio and I can't listen to too much of their music because I'll subconsciously rip it off and then realize it too late.
You hit the nail on the head there. You're very right about that, because I've been working on a song and I go out and it's in my head. I deliberately can't listen to any other music because it's forming as I'm thinking. So I take it, so if I end with a song, it'll probably kill me idea when I've got in the head and I won't feel the same buzz about it. So I have to sort of like not listen to music and just sort of patter around a bit and get my ideas stuff to start coming to me. And it's mad and it's sort of forming in itself. It happens and it's a beautiful thing to happen. Because once you play the finished piece and you record the finished song you hear in the playback, it just opens up. It's not such a great feeling to hear back what you're creating. I'll also be fortunate to have like great musicians around you and the same lateral thinking to sort of, you know, bounce your ideas back and forth and you know where you're coming from. There's like some people in the probably be like, oh, well, I'm the guitarist in the band, so I've got to write all the guitar parts or this and all that. We all have an input, we all have a say in what goes on. And that's the way I'm working with great musicians.
Well, as with you being four piece or multiple people in a band, do you find that the songs become better because each one of you has their own input and then that sparks other ideas when they hear the original piece?
Yeah, I'd say so. We always think of it like a canvas. Obviously, Joe will come with a finished song that he could easily play on an acoustic guitar, and we'll go, well, and if he has any ideas or anyone else has any ideas, they will be listened to, and you know, if it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, then we'll try something else. But basically, you know, we colour our shades in each. So, you know, I'll put my little stamp on it. I'll approach into drums or backing vocals, and Paul will approach in his way with guitar ideas, and Chris will do the same with bass ideas and bits of backing vocals too. So when it all comes together, it will be a finished canvas.
Nice. Well, how does that piece together during the recording process? Do the songs sound different when the record is done versus when you first get to the studio on the first day?
Well, it's
a lot of pre-production.
A lot of pre-production goes in before we go in the studio, because if you're doing the pre-production as you're recording, the clock is ticking and the time's wasting away. So if you have the song all 99% of it worked up before you hit the studio and you get it down, you know you're on the way, then they can take it away and listen to it. And like other things will come in and stuff. I mean, it's like I always tend to like do it on the lines of what the Beatles did. Because it's like, you know, it's like reading back on the John Lennon's Strawberry Fields, and he went through about 15 different versions and he's taken it all and listened to it. I don't like that bit, I want that bit. I put that bit with that bit, and that's what literally happens with us as a band. Like, you know, sometimes I'll suggest guitar parts to Paul, and Paul will come back and go, yeah, well, I've done this instead. And I go, okay, yeah, and with even little bits of notes that I might have played that weren't in it, I'll actually put that in. So it's literally piecing it. It's like John Lennon when he recorded the song Rain, and he went home, he said at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he lit up a big joint, and he put the tapes on backwards, and he said it sounded like an old Indian, and he said he wanted to come in and record all the songs like that. So I think it's three, what happens, you know. It's like, there's a song on the debut album called Ready to Ride, which when you hear it, you won't think it's the same band as he's speaking to you now, because change, and it's very East Coast jazz.
West Coast.
But when I originally wrote it, I got the idea, and the image I had in my head was from the film Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and it's the part where the girls and
Jessica Rabbit.
Yeah, and she's, and I got that idea come from that. When you hear the song, you think this is not the same band as after they get their new single, because of the diversity in the songwriting, you'd be very, very, very surprised. Very surprised.
Now, are there a lot of surprises on the album like that, where, you know, it maybe sound like five or six different bands there?
No, what it is, it's the different styles of music. It's still us, but it's still so catchy, but it's like an institution, so to speak.
It's basically, when the album first came out, I always said that the way I described it was it was consistently versatile. There was a lot of different things on it, but you could still tell the same band. It didn't sound like, as you said, you know, it didn't sound like, you know, four or five different bands. Now, on reflection, because we're moving away from that now, but obviously we're moving to, you know, we're doing new things and we're sort of leaving that album behind to do, you know, new singles and a new album soon. I feel like it's an, what's the word? Like, it's like a resume, the first album. It's like, you know, hello everyone, this is the band, here we are, expect the unexpected, because, you know, we've got all of these different styles on this album, and, you know, who knows, we might follow that with, a second album that's full of, you know, really up-tempo and heavy rock songs. But then after that, we might follow that with an album that's full of, you know, very mellow type of songs with brushes and nice piano parts and stuff. And, you know, we might follow that with an out-and-out freak-out psychedelic album. You know, it's basically, people listen to the album and think, well, if they can do a mixture of these songs on that album, wow, what will they think of next? And at this moment, we've just been caught in this very heavy, up-tempo rock period, but it's still very, very catchy at the same time. So I think we're caught to that period at the moment, but what will happen after that, hey, who knows, but I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, what I can honestly say is all the songs that are on the first album and the new single that's just been brought, I write them all on acoustic guitar. All them songs can be played on acoustic guitar. They can have piano arrangements, they can be heavy metal. The song is still there. Once you ship it back, it can be played on acoustic guitar, so sing along to it. And that's what the Beatles did, and that's what we go for.
It's good that you bring that up, because you're right. I mean, and that is basically another lesson in songwriting, that you could, these songs are good enough to where you can take them into another genre, and then they would translate just as well. Like, you could have a symphony orchestra play one of these tracks.
Yeah, because the track.
Because the melody will translate over.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's you know, it is a lesson in songwriting. It's like great hook, great melodies, great lyrics, and a sing along chorus, a catchy chorus. It has to be. There's a song on the album, the first album we've done, and it's sort of a Hamas and the Walls. It's actually got a string section on it. It has, and it's, you hear it, you're like, wow, this is like, you know, I mean. The actor, you ever, the actor Michael Shipley, his name,
yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, he was in the film Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis. Yeah, he's bought the album, he's our friend. He said he idolises the band, he speaks to us on Facebook, and we're in Liverpool and he's over there and stuff and all that, you know. It's, the people that bought it on your side of the pond, the Hollywood actors, is unreal. And we're like, well, this is really happening, you know.
Matthew Modine bought the album.
Oh, wow. Wow, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, Michael Keaton bought the album. Yeah, Robin Wyatt, I mean.
Yeah, she played Calamity Jane in Deadwood.
Yeah, she bought it. Yeah, so it's, when you hear it, you know that we're not a band messing around, we're serious. You hear that first album. I mean, you hear the new single, wait to hear the new songs that are going to come, that are on the way. It's, you know, so catchy and so. Sunset was very, very psychedelic.
We've recently been demoing some new tracks over the weekend and this week and all that.
Me and Paul McCartney's with us.
Basically, you know, and you know, we whittled them off pretty quickly and all that. As far as I'm concerned, you know, if you listen to me, you think, demos, what? Why don't you release them? You know, I think that they're good. The songs are there, but obviously, you know, we just quickly recorded them more than say what we do usually, but so we would just record it very quickly, only a couple of takes on each thing. But again, if you listen to them, you think, what, demos? Sounds releasable to me, and I believe that. Sounds incredible. I'm really, really pleased.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that's when you can tell that you're really on to something is when the demos actually sound like the masters.
Yeah.
You did.
I mean, did you actually? It's insane.
When we went in there last week, we were given three recordings. The engineer thought we'd only get two songs from. So we went in as a full band, and we basically cut four songs, done and dusted, four new tracks all day. And in the space of about 5-6 hours.
Now, earlier we talked about some of the celebrity feedback that you've been getting. What have some of those celebrities have been saying? Like, because, I mean, that would just, if I was in that band, that would just totally psych me up. I mean, I would be on cloud nine over that.
Michael Shipley, on the range of sessions we've been doing to America, he's on one show, and we ended up getting on the show late due to a technical problem. And we were actually speaking to him online, and he was just really, really complimenting the song that he heard and stuff. He said, I love it. And we speak to him on Facebook. He said, you've got to get over here. You've got to get stateside. So we're like, well, you know, pay for the flights and the hotels and all that, and we'll get over there. You know what I mean? But we want not more, because there's so much diversity in the music. I mean, we're massively into the Beatles, the Doors, the Who, you know, the Stones and all that, all the greats, you know. We also love a lot, idolize Motown, Smokey Robinson, Marvin Gaye, Bert Bacharach, you know, even like, you know, people that you wouldn't even hear of, you know, that we're into, like Jacques Brel, you know, Len Cohen. There's a lot, we into a lot of music. We've got a very, very healthy background.
I mean, I've been listening to Elmore James recently, and he's from your local area. Well, he was from your local area, I believe. Wasn't he from Chicago? Yeah, and a lot of like that. The electric Chicago blues of like Chess Records and stuff. I mean, I love all that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. So we're all into a lot of different music.
So maybe like Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder then too.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a track on YouTube there, one of our songs we played live. I mean, it's a very, very Motown influence.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'll do is get Colin to send over a few videos.
Okay.
As well, tracks, you know. You'd be very surprised if you hear. But the new single is really moving towards now, but we'll just send you over some previous stuff and all that. And you should go, whoa, is this the same
band? A backlist.
Yeah, that actually kind of brings up my next question. Okay, what should you expect when you go to a Joe Symes and a Loving Kind show live?
Great catchy songs, and also a few surprises.
Expected.
You know what you will get is total interaction with the audience and get the audience involved in the sense that it's their show as well.
So it's a total interaction and immersion.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, because one thing I hate, I mean, you know, we all go to a lot of gigs, and sometimes, you know, you might see a band locally or out and about if you're playing yourself, and they'll play a song, and then the audience will applaud, and they'll say thanks, and they'll mumble out, and this is our next song, and you say, what? Speak up. You know, they're like very quiet on stage, and it might not be intentional, or it might be due to their ego, if they've got something, might go, yeah, I'm just like someone, what's that? You know, speak clearly, we can't hear what you're saying, you know, so, you know, and some people just say bizarre things between the songs, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, I've had most of myself, I've been at gigs, and like, the band on it, interact with the audience. We don't even compliment the audience or nothing like that. And it's something that we do consciously. I do consciously, always.
Now, I notice a lot. I know what you're talking about, because I do see some bands over here doing that, where it's almost like a glorified practice where the audience just happens to be there and they're just going through one song to song two to song three, so on and so forth. But, you know, having said that, are you guys, when you guys are like live, are you guys like totally interacting with the audience? Like they're part of, like it's more of a party?
Yeah.
Yeah, always. Yeah, and you have to inspect the audience, check the audience involved, because at the end of the day, it's the audience will find the music and where you're going to be. So you have to give compliments to them. It's not worse than someone, they're just arrogant towards the audience and they don't explain what the song's about. So, you know, they could be, for all you know, they could be like singing about, like, you know, car wheels or something like that, or, you know, walking up the stairs, and there's, you know, there's no soul. You know, you've got to inspect the audience. It's very, very important. You have to, because they're the ones that are buying your music and, you know, are going to support you.
Yeah, because that's the moment of truth is when they leave at the end of the night. You know, are they going to go home and look up your music?
Yeah. I mean, it'll take any gig you go to. I mean, you know, somebody you brought up on, you go and see them and all that, and you go away from that gig and you go away feeling good, you put the music on when you get home, you think about the night, and it's left on the night, and so it's like, it's, you know, it's self-explanatory. You know, you've got to, like, yeah, it's a rule, you have to interact with the audience. If you don't, then they're not going to feel part of what's going on. They're not going to enjoy it.
You can't alienate your audience.
No.
Well, because isn't that also the best form of advertising? Because, I mean, that's word of mouth.
Yeah.
That next day when they're at work or at their friend's house and they're saying, and they're asked, what did you do last night? And then what they say next is going to depend on how good the band was.
Exactly. It's word of mouth as well.
And you've got to be memorable as well, because, you know, you can be a band, you can travel all around the UK or play locally or even travel the world. Now, if you haven't got the goods, if you haven't got the songs, then, you know, it'll be like someone will come to see the band and they'll go, oh, I saw a band, say a band might do a gig in America from the UK, and someone will go, oh, I saw this band, they were a British band, I saw last night, apparently they're doing a tour. Okay, what were they called? Oh, I can't remember. What were the songs like? Oh, I can't remember, but I remember they were from the UK. And, you know, if you do that, then it's pointless, because you need to say, they had some catchy song, and I remember this, I remember that. So, you know, that you need to, you know, if people aren't going to remember you, or a song, or even just one song, or one part of one song does not stick in your head, then I think you're screwed.
Yeah, exactly, because it all comes down to putting that stamp on their mind. Are you going to do something or say something or play something that's going to be in their head tomorrow? Because also you got to remember, a lot of these people are drinking too.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Of course. Yeah,
so, well. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's got to be memorable.
It's gig. You've got to go with some gig. Can't wait to see you again.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you this. What's the most exotic place you've ever played then? Because there, you know, some audience, you know, audiences are diverse, and not just in, you know, one country, but in also a region.
Well, we haven't broke out of the UK gigging wise as of yet. You know, we've done radio sessions and magazine interviews internationally, yes, but we are yet to actually physically gig out of the UK. I don't know. I mean, you know, we were playing everywhere, but exotic. That's yet to happen. But I mean, not too long ago, we done a big weekend tour in London, and obviously London's like a country in itself because it's so big.
It is, yeah, it's
big,
it is.
Big cities and what is it? You know, it's like. I mean, you know, I won't say it's as big as, say, maybe New York, for example, but it might be about half the size of that, and that's a big city within itself. But it is. It's so big. It's like, you know, one gig we played one part of London, the next night we played another part, and then the last night we'd done another part. It was like playing in three different regions or three different cities within its or towns within itself. So I think that was up there. I think that nice London weekend that we done. I think that I've put that up there, definitely.
It was great. We went to Abbey Road Studios as well.
Yeah.
Well, in New York, London is about the size of New York. I think there's only like 100,000 people difference.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a lot, but it's not that much when you see the two sizes, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, we're getting asked to go over to the States all the time. And I think we'd really rock state of Hollywood. With the songs,
and probably wouldn't want to leave.
Probably wouldn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Can we stay?
Oh no, I was just gonna ask you where would you want to play? What is your dream city to play in?
Mine is New York. New York, definitely.
New York,
definitely first choice.
New York, Boston,
I'd love to do the whiskey bar.
Chicago, Detroit, LA.
Everywhere.
I'll play anywhere and everywhere in the States.
I mean, it's also like, you know, if we go over to the States and all, we'd like to go over there for the, like, you know, the history and all that, like go to Memphis and stuff.
Oh yeah. Nashville
would love you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't let the stigma fool you. Nashville is not just country.
Yeah. Well, that's very true because I mean, what an act that, you know, a person I've been listening to recently, Jack White, his record label's based in Nashville, Third Man Records, isn't it? He lives there now, even though he's from Detroit. He actually lives there and does all his work there and everything. Like, so, you know, I mean, he's not exactly what you call country, you know. He's based what you might call rock with little elements here and there of folk and country. But he's there, so, you know, I mean, I think he's probably one of the main people I'd love to allow to put there. I'd love him to produce some of our stuff because I reckon it'd be right up his street because he loves all classic stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
I would actually say Nashville is possibly our version of Liverpool. To be honest, yeah, because like America looks at Liverpool as the musical hotbed of the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what Nashville is here for us.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. There's all, you know, Liverpool is like, you know, it's where it all began, basically. You know, I mean, like, part of that was Elvis, you know, but there's also the main cities in the UK. It's Liverpool, London, Manchester. And then you go to, like, Scotland, it's like Glasgow as well. I mean, they're the main ones, the real biggies.
Birmingham, I'd say as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But definitely Liverpool, Manchester, London are definitely the biggest ones for, like, the music that's coming out and stuff. Mm-hmm.
I would put Cardiff up there too, as far as UK.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll add that to the list. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Have you got a postal address that you can send to us? I will send you a CD copy of our Dave Robin through the post,
yeah? Yeah. Actually, yeah. Yo, I'll give that to you after the interview's over, man.
Yeah. It'll be sealed up and all that. It says you're going to buy it on iTunes. I will send it. It's only got it in your hand. You can look at the artwork, the presentation. It's got the lyrics in the album, with the gatefold, and it's really... I'll send that to you through the post.
That'd be great. Thank you so much, man.
Promise to spread the word.
Oh, I'll definitely spread the word, because I mean, this, you guys sound awesome. I mean, you guys actually kind of embody our tagline, which is the evolution of revolution.
Thanks. So exactly.
And I mean, like, I think you guys are well on your way of making it. I got a feeling I'm going to see you guys over here pretty soon.
You do come over, the beans are on you.
All right, yeah, most definitely. I'll even let you crash at my place.
Oh, thanks, yeah. You can throw some good sounds on, you can sit down and jam on that.
Definitely. Yeah, man, I'll sit in on a few, man. We could play some old Beatles tunes, too.
Yeah, we can do the whole back Beatles catalog if you want as well.
There you go. So, well, what else?
Chicago Blues as well.
definitely, man. Well, what does Joe Symes and the Love and Kind have coming up now that the album's out and you guys are playing and everything?
The album's out.
The single will be out.
The single will be out soon, which you've got a promo copy of. And then we're looking to, like, you know, we're looking to come up to playing festivals and stuff and more gigs on it.
We've got a gig tomorrow in Liverpool. There's a festival going off today, tomorrow, and Sunday called the Threshold Festival. It's not a festival like in a field. It's like the Edinburgh Festival. It's just basically in one part of Liverpool. The man's gone blank, but basically, there's a collection of venues.
And a Baltic Social.
The Baltic Triangle that's in Liverpool, and there's a load of venues in that. In that part of town, and there's gigs, art shows, and all kinds going off there the weekends, and we're playing in a place called District, which is a venue in that area. So that's tomorrow. We're also playing a place called the Tabernacle, which is in South Wales. That's for Alan McGee, who used to own Creation Records inside Oasis and the Jesus and Mary Chain. That's organised by him. That'll be going off. And I think we've been invited to a party after it, in which they've insisted on us playing some songs. So that's good. And there's a few festivals, and there's other things getting organised. And we've actually got a few more magazine interviews and radio sessions. I think it's on Easter week over there in the States. So I think this is one of three that we're doing over the next week or two that's in the States. So we're off to a good start. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All good.
Yeah, you guys are well on your way, man. I can't wait. I know I'm going to see you guys over here, man.
Hope so.
So, well, thanks for doing the interview. I really appreciate it. I mean, you guys are great.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you and to also have us on the show. And it's always a pleasure.